The Money Show.
Shapeshifters.
Carlo Gonzaga is our shapeshifter, former Taste Holdings chief executive. It's been a long time, Carlo, since we last chatted, but I see you're still making waves in the restaurant world, or at least in the feeding people world, because restaurants aren't a thing anymore, are they?
Yeah. Good evening, Bruce. Giving us this. Yeah, it has been some time.
What you up to? Explain.
Well, I think I took a couple of years off since Taste, and towards the end of last year, some of the management team that was in Taste approached me with a couple of the brands that they owned when Taste were disposing of their food businesses, and those were Fish and Chip Co. and Maxi's. And so in December last year, with that management team, they did an MBO and asked me to assist them buying it out, which we did. So that's been keeping me busy in the last couple of months. And of course, COVID has heightened that busyness. And with that, one of the new brands that we've launched last week is what's commonly referred to as a cloud kitchen.
We'll talk about cloud kitchens because I think they're fascinating spaces, and whether or not they can be franchised in a moment. But you had a lovely business in Taste Holdings, and most of which was Scooter's Pizza, which, if memory serves, I think your dad started, and then it was listed.
We co-founded it, yeah.
Co-founded, beg your pardon. And then you brought Domino's to the country, and you began the process of converting those Scooter stores to Domino's stores. And as we've discovered, it's blimmin' hard to do. And ultimately, that cost you your job, and it cost you a fortune, probably.
Yeah, I think, all of the above. We took a view back in, I think it was really about 2012, when we wanted to license international brands. And that was across our portfolio, which ended up in the jewelry business when we bought Arthur Kaplan as well, was giving realization to that idea about licensing brands. And, when I left in 2018, it was pursuant to one of our major shareholders, I think had about 35% at the time, took their stake up to 65%. And, they wanted to put in their own CEO that they had a different way that they wanted to conduct the Domino's business back then. Which was far more decentralized and not as vertically integrated as we had been building it. And, I think we took a swing at the fence and we came up a bit short in the end.
Why did it go wrong? I mean, what did you learn in the process?
I wear long sleeve shirts now for the scars I've got through that one.
I'm sure.
But, certainly at the time, I think that one of the key learnings is we expanded incredibly quickly when we brought Domino's to the market.
Well, and, I suppose you had to. I mean, the pressures of the royalties and the licensing fees are huge. It requires, doesn't it, a really aggressive rollout?
Well, also, in a vertically integrated model, that also puts pressure on expanding quickly because you've built some infrastructure in the back end to make dough in that particular case and distribution, which you've got to grow into. A lot of businesses do it the other way around. So, most franchises in South Africa started off as pure franchises, and then over time became vertically integrated when the numbers made obvious sense. In Domino's, it was a little bit the other way around. So, I think in hindsight, though, we probably, if I were to do it again, and when we brought Starbucks to the market, we did do it differently. The risks of growing too quickly outweigh the benefits from market share gain that you get. That's really what that was a case study in. Certainly in the beginning. And at the time, we had too much debt. And when the economy started to go, particularly in food, to the tide started to go out in about 2015. It pretty much affected everybody. We were the guys that had the most debt at the time. And it took us a long time to come back from that in food. And in fact, in some cases, I suppose we never did, given where Domino's has ended up and Starbucks being sold to a private entity.
Now, Starbucks stores, they're expanding. I saw Domino's the other day. Is it the same Domino's that you brought? Because it's kind of hard to keep track of these things. Because Domino's initially was brought to South Africa about 20 years ago. That didn't work. And then you brought it. And I don't know if that is this iteration is the same one that you brought out.
So I'm actually not sure, Bruce. I know there still are Domino's stores trading, but I haven't been particularly close to that part of the business, the Taste business.
But it's fascinating. I mean, just learning from missteps and mistakes, and when cycles go against you, and you with all the best intentions and all the best planning in the world, it can still go horribly wrong. Was it a mistake, do you think, or in retrospect, could it have worked out for you if you'd operated slightly differently, if you'd had a different view of your growth path? Could it have worked, or was it actually a mistake in totality?
Yeah, so you know, I think it was Michael Jordan that tweeted at some stage that more fiction has been written in Excel than Word, and you know, all these spreadsheets make sense when you see them. And you know, in hindsight, the decision to bring Domino's, I don't think was the incorrect one. The way we executed it, yeah, clearly we could have done differently. I don't think there's any argument that says that we did the right way. But the technology that we brought to the market, the Domino's business itself, is a good one in every single market elsewhere in the world. In markets very similar to South Africa demographically. You know, we spent time in Mexico City with that Domino's franchisee, and Mexico is very much like South Africa, just three times the size, unemployment, you know, vast disparities of income, and it was our execution that ultimately did us in, and the particular part of that was the expansion, that we took too big a bite, and you know, at the time we probably had indigestion, as some people put it.
Did it affect you badly? I mean, it's a hell of a thing to have this big, bold ambition and you slog your guts out to make it work. And it just, you know, it's not going to work, and eventually you have to call it and you go. Did it have a negative impact?
It's an interesting thing, Bruce. So, you know, when we were, you know, one of the hallmarks of entrepreneurship is you've got to be optimistic around, you know, around everything you're doing. Otherwise, you just wouldn't do it. You know, pulling stuff out the ground is just, it's just too difficult if you don't have a plan that you believe in. So we, you know, we certainly felt that the management team then, that we were, you know, 2 years into our 3 year plan to get the business to break even. So from that perspective, you know, we never thought that we were fighting a losing battle. We always thought we had a plan to get us out of it. So from that perspective, we were never in it thinking, oh goodness, you know, we're in a rear guard action here and this is never going to work. Of course, when I left Toast, you know, having been in the business for 18 years, co-founded at the time with my dad and the current CEO, in fact, Duncan Crossan. And, you know, leaving Taste was interesting because you always wonder to yourself, how big a part of your identity is your work when you leave a business like that? And so, you know, I was fortunate to be able to take a couple of years off and travel, which I did. You know, in that managed to, you know, probably reflect on some of the great privilege I had to lead a business for that long. And be at the sharp end of the stick, you know, listed entity, you know, working with some great people and doing some really interesting stuff. You know, of course, the loss is not a great, you know, it's a good lesson to learn, but, you know, preferably you don't have to learn it too often.
Yeah, and other people can learn it. You can read the book and you can go, oh, I mustn't do that. But you're the guy who lived it. When Chris Becker took time out, he went and bought Tencent. Did you have that kind of time out? Did you go, or was it purely broadening your mind and experiencing the world, which is something you wouldn't have had time to do before?
A bit of both. You know, I took when you... every day you got to wake up and you got to find something, you know, to do yourself. So that requires discipline. Fortunately, you know, I think most entrepreneurs are fairly disciplined. So yeah, I took some time off, did a fair bit of traveling with my family, and then towards last year, I started to think, you know, a lot more about what I would do. Had to deal with some health issues through the second half of last year, and was lucky enough to be able to deal with those. And then COVID hit. What I really enjoyed through that journey and my engagement with Starbucks and Domino's in particular was, you know, understanding how technology can engage with something that is as consumerist as eating food. And that's really where a lot of my thinking is moving to now in terms of what the top areas that I'm looking at being involved in is things where tech plays a big part in the outcome. That's certainly one of them. And I really enjoyed my engagement with this food team that I've been involved in for the last 9 months now.
It's not every day, though, that your former team comes to you and says, "Oi, remember us? We've got an idea. Can you help?" Because that's, I think, is testament to the way they see you, the way they saw you as the boss in your time, and to say, you know, come on board, help us with Maxi's and Fish and Chip Company, and let's see where it goes. I mean, that's, I think, a very, very good compliment.
Yeah, look, you know, I'd like to think that these were guys that, and the entire team came over. And when the current MD of the business approached me, I think it took me about 5 seconds to say, "Cool, let's do it." because you get to know people when you're in battle. And in Taste, we got up and we went to war every single day. And that entire exec team, not one of them left during the time that I was there. And I've also since, the technology team that was in Taste also approached me last year. And they've started a boutique technology consultancy that focuses in a couple of verticals, but mainly around rewards and e-commerce. And so I've joined there, they asked me to join them as well as a non-exec on their little business, which I'm quite enjoying giving back to people, guys that worked for me. And, I sort of work for them now as a non-exec, which I find quite intriguing.
Yeah, and you've got to wind your neck in, I suppose, from time to time. Talk to me then about the structure of what you're doing now. Maxi's and Fish and Chip Company, are they ready to grow in an environment that is so really, really difficult for anything to grow, but particularly in fast food, which requires disposable income, optimism, and a sense of the future, which for many people doesn't exist right now?
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. None of us, I think we're all battling to figure out what the future looks like. Something like the Fish and Chip Co., to the team that are running that, when we went into COVID, they had a view around how quickly that would bounce back. That business services very much lower income consumers. And, astoundingly, we've actually been opening stores since June, since we came out of hard lockdown. When they were telling me that they're opening stores, I was gobsmacked. And this month, they've actually shown positive same-store sales versus last year.
Wow.
But the restaurant businesses, we know, are in far deeper trouble. So our Maxi's business is, I think about minus 15 in same-store sales, with fish and chips positive. And we don't deliver in our fish and chip business because the location of their sites, are not sites where people would deliver into. It's strip malls in lower-income areas and rural areas. But we've seen that business bounce back unbelievably. We didn't call that when you're going into COVID. So it really is an unknown territory for us about, where money does sit in the shadow economy and where disposable income sits.
It's such an interesting phenomenon. And the fact that you are growing and you're opening up new stores is wonderful to hear. Cloud kitchens. I mean, this is a phenomenon that sort of, as we were going into lockdowns, we were hearing of more and more people switching their kitchens and having, there were big ambitious plans, and I don't know if they've all come to fruition, but one guy was looking at having 9 different chefs in one space, and you would phone up and you'd say, well, Granny wants Italian, Dad wants Spanish, I fancy some Greek, and John fancies some poiky course, and you could get it all from the same place. It all get delivered in great containers, and it would all just be hunky-dory and perfect. It sounded like a nightmare. What are you doing in the cloud kitchen space?
So our approach is a little closer to the stuff that we understand. The starting premise, and this did start out of COVID, is what accelerated the thinking around this. And there were a couple of reasons in terms of why we did it. But let me just talk about cloud kitchens for a second. So, I think that I've been in food. I started off as a franchisee back in 1996. And I was a pizza franchisee then for Debonair's Pizza. I've been in food since then. My entire working life, I've been a franchisee and been a franchisor. And restaurants have become incredibly difficult to operate and to be profitable in. It's a hell of a tough environment. Labor is tough. Productivity, believe it or not, aside from McDonald's putting in self-service kiosks, there's been almost nothing that's happened in labor productivity over the last 20 years. Delivery is bloody hard, I've got to tell you. Having done delivery ourselves, and we own Domino stores, we did so in scooters, delivery is hard. And then landlords, over time, they just wield so much power that the entire the business model around franchising food, I just think is by and large broken when it comes to prime sites. So when we were thinking about the problem, we weren't thinking about this idea, from the angle of bringing chefs in, and all those, I think, will have some validity and have their place in time. But we're trying to think, well, how do we solve, number one, franchisee profitability, and how do we make food an easier business to run and a fun business to run? And so we thought, we understand this. What are the pain points? Pain points are the things I've spoken about. Labor, administration in stores is massive. In a small little shop, an average restaurant it will employ 80 people if you include waiters. The admin overhead around 80 people is massive. You cannot imagine how big that is. So very highly regulated. So part of the problem that we want to solve, aside from a consumer problem and a consumer offering, is a franchisee profitability problem. So yeah, and what a cloud kitchen does in our sense, the world, is you've only got a kitchen, you're not dependent on prime site landlord, because you can put your kitchen in a C-grade site, so you don't have a landlord dictating that you trade during non-profitable trading hours. You've got a far smaller staff component that are very focused on one thing only. And you've got a great return on investment because you haven't built out this massive customer seating area that you've got a service that is probably going to be half utilized on average, and that you have to revamp every 3 or 4 years because you've got to keep up with the latest trends that are happening in look and feel. So that's been our approach to how, you know, one of the benefits around cloud kitchens is how we give franchisees a better return on investment proposal. And we've taken that, you know, quite a step further in terms of the POS. So, you know, we're completely cashless because we integrated with Uber at the moment and hopefully Mr. D in the future. So there's no paper in the stores. There's no cash in the stores. There's no credit card machine in the stores. So as a franchisee, you can come into the store or you can look at the status of the store on the app that you've got with our point of sale. In time, you'll be able to see how much inventory you've got before shift starts. You'll know because of biometric logins whether everyone is logged into their shift as they should have been. And we're trying to make it easier for franchisees to own multiple stores, because that's really how you get to create wealth over time. In my experience, is to own multiple stores. So that's part of the problem that we're trying to solve by franchising a cloud kitchen. So ours is, you know, a single menu. It's one brand. And it's one franchise owner who's still going to be in there. But we're trying to build a system so he doesn't have to be in there every single hour of every single day. And in fact, we would like him to keep his job or her to keep his job and be able to do this. And it adds flexibility to where the stores can be positioned. So you can easily put these in industrial parks, as an example, and have Monday to Friday trading hours, if that's the type of lifestyle that you want. So that's the one problem that we're trying to solve. That's a mouthful, I know.
No, but it's really interesting, and I mean, you clearly had time to think, and you've applied yourself to it rigorously. And so, tell me about the concept that you're working on right now.
Yeah, so we've opened our first store called Cloud Dine. Opened, you can't access the site.
Cloud Dine or Cloud Nine?
Cloud Dine.
Cloud Dine, because it's clever. It's in the cloud. It's a virtual. It's virtual and it makes you feel good. So Cloud Dine, you're dining. It's I like the play on words. Yes.
It's so you can only access us currently through that. You can access us through the Uber Eats or the Mr. Delivery app. So you've got to have an account with them. And we deliver in the radiuses that they're in. So, you know, our franchisee doesn't have to worry about delivery from the sense of, they're not his delivery drivers, not his motorbikes. Doesn't have to worry about the insurance and the things if they get a flat along the way. All he's really got to worry about is on the quality of the food, and the whole business has been optimized so that we can focus on delivery. So we only have items on there that deliver well. So when it gets to your door, it's, you know, it's in the right packaging, and it's been made within the time. We're not, you know, we're not making people that have walked in through the door. We're not prioritizing them, as an example. And because we built the business model, we're not adding onto the cost of the food the cost of delivery, which is what most restaurants now. I mean, we've all heard how restaurants are having to have different pricing tiers for, you know, food that's delivered through delivery aggregators like Uber Eats and Mr. D versus ordering it in the restaurant. And because we built the model with that into account, you know, we're not adding that. So the customer's not having to foot that bill for delivery because our business model is only focused around delivery.
If I wanted to buy a cloud dine franchise, what do I get for my money?
So you get yourself a kitchen. We currently offer a turnkey solution for 700,000 Rand ex-VAT.
Okay.
And for that, you get an entire restaurant, you know, you get without seating. So you get a restaurant kitchen that makes everything, it's optimized for delivery around, sort of at the moment, favorite foods around burgers, flame grilled chicken. We've got grills, so you can buy ribs and a quarter chicken, pastas, pizzas, seafoods and salads. So it's a comprehensive commercial kitchen that we're able to innovate and add new products into, quite easily without having to put new cost into the business.
That's all massively competitive. Those are all massively competitive categories, though. I mean, how do you differentiate when everything is so competitive in all of those menu items that you mentioned?
Yeah, and that's really where the rubber meets the road in all of this. You've got to be able to make great food. So we haven't, what we haven't done is just gone and rehashed all recipes that we've known about. We are building a brand new brand And that's going to take time, like all brands. And you've got to be able to compete in those categories. The other categories, quite honestly, are just not big enough. You know, Asian food is you know, typically the fourth biggest category. You know, great tasting, but just doesn't have the scale. And you know, there are a lot of individual restaurants that do that. So you know, we're not afraid to compete. If you're going to be in food, you're always going to be competing. And you know, those categories that we're in are really the big categories. We you know, we've got a great value proposition because we're not adding it on to the we're not adding the delivery onto the price of the product. So from a value perspective, consumers that are trying to order something for their whole family, you know, they do get to go to one place. You don't have to have, you know, the fight I have with my kids every time. One wants pizza and one wants seafood. So, you know, I've either got to get there, either got to eat at different times, or I've got to drive to one and get a delivery from the other, is how it works. But yeah, but delivery, fortunately with food, if you serve good food and you do it consistently, there will be a space for you in the market.
Is this the future, or is it just a fad? What is your sense of it?
So I mean, I've got absolutely no doubt in my mind. When you asked about conviction, and I've definitely got it on this. Is that this will be a significant part of the future? There will still be a place for top end restaurants that deliver an experience, but the middle segment of restaurants that are fairly wishy washy and nondescript, you know, I think that they've got a very hard road. Because they're going to have to deliver, and their business models simply cannot afford it when you've spent a couple of million bucks on setup. You're paying the rentals that you're paying. You have to trade in hours where you're not making any money out of those hours because your lease agreement says that. You know, those restaurants, unfortunately, with the way that people have adopted online technology, you know, consequent to the lockdown, you know, are really going to battle. You know, I really don't see that those are going to be attractive investment opportunities in the medium term. Forget the long term.
What a lovely insight, Carlo Gonzaga, into what you're up to. Thank you very much for sharing it with us. Non-executive director at Fiamme Holdings. Is that pronounced correctly? Fiamme?
Could be Italian, Bruce.
Sì, buongiorno. You know, but the best thing that's happened to me tonight, not only catching up with you, which has been lovely, by the way, but I haven't thought of Donald Trump and Joe Biden for the last half hour. So thank you for that. I feel considerably better as a result of this conversation. Carlo Gonzaga, do really interesting things in the world of restaurants and cloud kitchens. Cloud Dine is the new concept.